It's a lot of white chicks here in Montreal. O.J. Simpson would have a field day out here because he had jungle fever, you know. Jungle fever is interracial dating. I had jungle fever before. I had it for 2 years. I don't know where I caught it. I'm sure it was Starbucks. It had to be Starbucks. I used to go to Starbucks every morning. I used to hide behind a plastic plant, just waiting for them to come in with them Lemon Lulu yoga pants and them UGG boots. And I used to wait for them to call a coffee order. They'd be like, double frappuccino for Amber? I'm like, oh. I had jungle fever so bad, I used to go hunting for white chicks. I used to go to the farmer's market every Sunday. 6 o'clock in the morning, I had the farmer's market outfit on. I had a baseball cap. I kept squeezing the brim, make it look like a Hootie and a Blowfish hat. I had a Bruce Springsteen t-shirt, cut off shorts. I had flip-flops, Pilates ball under one arm. I had a yoga mat on the other arm. I had a recycle bag made out of a recycle bag that was just recycled with a whole bunch of kale and gluten-free stuff. White chicks love kale and gluten-free. A year ago, I didn't even know what gluten-free meant. This dude said gluten-free. I was like, how long was he locked up, dog?
On this episode of The Commercial Break.
You know, Jamaican guys, like, they sound very wise because of that accent. I just gotta admit it. They could say anything and it would sound like wisdom. I went to Jamaica once and there was a guy that was talking to me and I couldn't tell you half of the stuff that he was saying, but I felt it was profound because of the way he was saying it. Yes. I was like, whatever you're saying, that is pretty wise. Yeah,
that's so funny because I used to have a bit about that. I was like, in Jamaica, it'd be like, if one man put one burger on one bun with one piece of cheese, what do you have? You have a fucking cheeseburger, man.
That's awesome.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
Oh, yeah, cats and kittens, welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Green. This is my dear friend and the co-host of this show, Kristen Joy Hoadley. Best to you, Chrissy.
Best to you, Brian.
Best to you out there in the podcast universe. Thanks for joining us on a TCB infomercial Tuesday with Donnell Rawlings. I mean, a generational comic, a guy who only comes around once in a generation.
He's got his body of work. Is
his body and his body
and
of work.
Lists and yes. Lists and pages and pages and pages.
Actor, heckler, former Air Force police sergeant, comic, stand-up comedy, all the things. The Chappelle Show, The Wire.
The Wire, yep.
The Corner, which I never heard about until Chrissy started talking about, but we'll talk to him about that if we get into it. And stand-up comic. He's currently out there on the road. He's got a brand new special, links in the show notes. Donnell has been on The Chappelle Show. I'm rich, bitch!
Yep.
That's his tagline. You all know it. Ashy Larry.
Ashy Larry.
Ashy Larry. He was Ashy Larry. He was all the things. I mean, the guy is like, quite frankly, I'm a little, I got goosebumps that even Donnell even agreed to come on The Commercial Break. Clearly, this is a mistake, and we better do it quickly before he changes his mind. Yep. And we'll talk to Donnell about all of those things. Can't wait. I actually saw Donnell was with Joe List, Rory Scoville, Mark Normand, and that guy who plays Dr. Phil worse than I do. I play Dr. Phil much better than he does, but, you know, he's made a
Adam Ray.
Adam Ray Comedy. Yep, Adam Ray Comedy on Instagram if you want to follow him. He's become Dr. Phil. He's had Dr. Phil on the Dr. Phil show. Yes, he has.
That's funny.
He plays Dr. Phil. He has a, you know, he puts on a bald cap and a mustache, and he does a really good Dr. Phil impression, and he's become this character, and he's selling out theaters being Dr. Phil, essentially.
Wow.
The comic Dr. Phil, obviously. But he had Dr. Phil on the Dr. Phil show. Lots of other famous people have showed up. He is like an offshoot of Kill Tony. Want to ask Donnell about Kill Tony, because there was a dust-up online at some point about Kill Tony. We'll ask him about that. What exactly the drama is there. We're not a drama show, but we should ask him, Chrissy.
Yeah, we should scratch the itch.
We should scratch the surface. We'll scratch the surface. We'll get into clickbait real quick, and then we'll dive out. We'll go in, and then we'll get out.
Yeah,
real quick. But Donnell Rawlings, can be found online. He's got a huge body of work, as Chrissy said, on YouTube, on Netflix, on Hulu, on all these different places, because he's been in so many different shows, most notably The Chappelle Show, but not too far below that, The Wire, which is one of the greatest television shows.
I mean, on any critics list you look at all, The Wire is either, if not number one, definitely in the top five.
Rightfully so.
So good.
Rightfully so.
Such a good show.
Yeah, if you haven't seen The Wire, you are 10 years too late to catch on to it when it was hot. But go watch it, because as Chrissy said, any...
I actually watched it after it was already... done.
Me too. Many years after it was done. I watched it during the pandemic,
I did too.
Yeah, like at the beginning of the pandemic, I started watching it and blew through it.
God, I know, you're addicted right away.
Yeah, I was watching episodes and episodes per day because I just couldn't get away from this fascinating world that they had created. And Donnell was part of that. And I'm very interested to know how and why he got, you know, got the part. And my understanding is that Donnell actually started in comedy because he was heckling
yes.
people. And he became such a good heckler that they said, you should be on stage, dude. If you're going to heckle all the other comedians, why don't you try it yourself? And he did.
And it took off.
Yeah, and 30 years later, Donnell is a name not to be missed when he comes close to your town. So let's do this. Let's take a break. And then through the magic of telepodcasting, Donnell Rawlings, legend Donnell Rawlings, right here on Little Old Commercial Break for your earballs. Okay, sound good?
Let's do it.
All right, we'll be back.
Why don't you text us? And we can text back. And then you can text us in reply. Then so on. It's a fun little game I've been playing. And I think you'll be great at it. 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. You could leave a message, too. If you do, maybe you'll end up being the voice of the show. But be warned, the pay is not great. You could go to the website and drop us an email also, tcbpodcast.com. And while you're there, you can get a free sticker. Who doesn't want a free sticker? Just go to the Contact Us button and ask for one. Follow us on Insta at The Commercial Break and watch the episodes at youtube.com/The Commercial Break. Now I'm going to go back to that texting game. You want to play? Come on. Bye.
Mr. Rawlings here with us now. Donnell, thanks so much for being here today. Really appreciate it. You are a former military guy, right?
Yeah, yes.
Air Force?
Yeah.
So I have a question that's timely and topical.
Okay.
You are in Los Angeles right now. We're just talking about this. We have friends that are out there and our agents out there, and they're largely noticing nothing because I think this kind of drama that's going on with the National Guard and the Marines is all happening in just a few pockets of Los Angeles. They're not, obviously not everybody's down in those pockets, but what's your take on if you were in the military and being deployed into the U.S. cities? I'm thinking about, like, from a soldier's point of view, is it just like orders?
Let me stop you for really quick. I was in the military, but I wasn't patriotic, okay?
That's my question. There you go.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll be honest. Black folks and white folks go in the military for two different reasons. You ask a white guy why you joined the military, to protect my country and its honor. You ask a black guy, GI Bill College, I was on the basketball team. They told me I was going to be a general in 3 weeks and I was going to have my own private jet. Yeah. So, when people come up to me, they're like, thank you for protecting me and keeping me safe. I got to be honest, everybody's listening. I did my time. If you would have expected me, future comedian, to protect you or keep you safe, you better off committing suicide, because if I get shot, everybody around me is getting shot. I'm just telling you. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I feel for the soldiers, man, because, you know, I got to imagine a lot of them are in the same mindset that you are. I am here for a job, to get a college education, to, you know, feed my family, whatever it is. I am not here for all the drama. And, you know, it's a great sacrifice that you make, because essentially you say, hey, if we go to war, I'm going to put myself in front of a bullet. But
I'm going to add to that. Yeah. This is why I know I wouldn't have been able to save any lives. When I was in the military, I was stationed in Kunsan, Korea, right? And we had nuclear weapons on that building. So we have what they call it, exercise. The exercise is when you practice if the base is going to be come under attack, how you protect the base and everything. Wow. So it's like a simulated war. And this is why I know I wouldn't have been able to help anybody, because every time we did an exercise, I died within the first minutes of the war. I was dead. And the reason why I died, because when you get, when they shoot you, they got the mouths get peep, your stuff go off. So you gotta lay on the field, and then they gotta simulate what would the response team do. So they gotta actually come and take you off the field. But when they take you off the field, you know where they take you? They take you to the basketball gymnasium. So needless to say, in all these war efforts, all the black guys were in the gym talking about money.
Yeah.
And those white dudes had their face painted up like, be quiet. They're going to know where we are. Low crawl, low crawl. We was in there like, we was like, I got next. Who got next?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you might want to talk to somebody else. I do respect what the military did for me as far as the transition from not exactly knowing what I want to do in my life. But I got to be honest, I'm not going to lie to anybody. I wasn't like, God bless America. You know, I was like, God bless this job.
Right.
And the opportunity it gave me.
Yeah, you know? Fair enough. You've been doing this a long time. I saw a reel a couple days ago. I was looking at your Instagram, and I saw a reel where two dudes just started smashing each other in the fucking, in the front row, or like in the second row of, you were at the improv?
You know what?
What's going on?
This is why you're full of shit, okay? It's because out of all the videos, I got videos of my son, and you just as guilty as everybody clicked on it. I got some stuff like this. Oh my God, he's such a great dad. And guess what you asked me? What happened at your fucking show? They going crazy, bro.
That's crazy. Yeah. Well, hey, I'll get you your son too, because I like what you have to say about being a parent. So
no, I will say this. It was interesting because I was at Arlington Improv, and I don't want to like throw any shade on the club. It just was one of those nights. I don't know how often it happens there, but I was starting off my show. I'm usually like a firecracker right out the gate. Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I hadn't connected with the audience yet. Right. So I kind of felt the room. It felt somewhat uneasy. And I saw a couple of people get up, and I was getting ready to start roasting them. I'm like this, all right, you can't give me a minute to get my stuff together. And next thing you know, pop, 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 pop. It went crazy.
Jeez.
But, and I've seen some interesting stuff. But, you know, even with that said, it was an opportunity. I could have been like, guess who gets off work early today?
Yeah, guess who's going home right now? Yeah,
I'm like, you know, check's going to be the same. But then I kind of felt sorry because a situation like that for the club, because it's an opportunity for the audience just to leave without paying their tabs, you know?
Oh, yeah. True.
I had some similar situation like that where I was at a club and they had a blackout and I had to do 45 minutes in the dark. Whoa. With no microphone or anything. I told people to put their lights on their phone just so they could illuminate the room, just so the club had an opportunity to make money. So I did that part. But the first thing I did when it happened, I was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what can you do? What do we need right now? And then I kind of drew from one of my favorite songs, Bill Withers. I started saying, sometimes in our lives,
yep.
We all have pain. And the funny thing about it was a group of women just jumped behind me on stage.
I saw that, yeah.
And I wanted to tell them, you do know that I'm not patriotic, right?
Yeah, right. That's a good segue.
You know, I'm the last person to protect
you. I'm like, yo, you're going to die or at least go to the basketball gym with me. It was like, and then I had a decision to make. I was like, do I quit? But I manned through it. And I did another 45 minutes after it was over. Of course, some of the people left the show. But I was surprised that half of the audience still stayed and I got to finish my show. It wasn't exactly the show that I thought in my brain. But at the same time, the interesting thing about comedy is the comedians that can adjust, you know what I mean, improvise and just keep it going. And that's what I did.
Yeah,
well, the thing I was so happy for, we were in Texas. And Texas is definitely a gun carrying state.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing that I was really nervous about, because it was chaotic. And then there was a moment of silence. And then I kept on was just bracing myself to hear pop, pop, pop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That never happened. I got 600,000 likes, so I won.
Yeah, I know. The reel went crazy. Yeah, Georgia's one of those states, too. It's an open carry state.
Yeah.
And time after time, judges in this state have said it doesn't matter what you put on the front door. You know, it's an open carry state. Mm-hmm. So you got to be careful. And I, you know, when we first had that law come out, I thought for sure I do on occasion go to the grocery store and see someone with a holster. And that makes me a little bit nervous. But, you know, that was what I thought when I saw the video first. I thought clearly there's popping coming because these guys went right at it. I mean, it was like came out of nowhere.
It's interesting that you say that being in an open carry state because I grew up in metropolitan areas like D.C., New York, and whenever you saw a gun, you thought it was about to be a crime committed. It wasn't it wasn't my right to bear arms. It was just like, you got a gun. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
for sure. I grew up in Chicago, and so, I mean, we didn't see guns. That's not what we saw. But you come down here to Georgia, it's just a whole...
Sounds like you grew up in a nice part of Chicago. Because
I'm not going to claim I grew up in Cabrini Green, Ron and Donnell. I'm just not going to tell.
I'm like, you said Chicago and haven't seen a gun? Oh, you're so privileged. You probably had both your parents, too. You're so lucky.
I had both my parents. For a while, I had both my parents.
That's awesome.
You've been doing this for a long time. And actually, when I see your face, I think I remember a lot of your character, like your acting work, as well as your comedic work, too. You were in one of my favorite television shows. I know you get this all the time, The Wire. Tell us a little bit about the experience working on The Wire. It's so raw on television when it came out. Yeah, it's so fucking
fascinating. I'll tell you this. If you're a historian of David Simon, you would know that before The Wire, there was a miniseries that won three Emmys. It was called The Corner. Mm-hmm. Charles Dutton directed that. It was a 6-part miniseries, and that was written by David Simon. And it was a story about a family that was dealing with addiction and the trials and the tribulations of being addicted. And that story was a very, very interesting story. And it was so successful that they wanted to do something else, but they couldn't continue that story. And that's why The Wire was a spinoff of the Corner. And I had the opportunity to work on The Corner. I played a heroin addict. And it was interesting because I was a very, very young talent at the time. And when I did this audition, I clearly thought I bombed in the audition. There was nothing that you were going to tell me that gave me any indication that I would get this role. To the point where when I first met David Simon, I had to ask him, and I already booked it. I said, why me? Mm. Right? I was like, why me? I said, I swear I thought I bombed in that audition. And he said, we like the fact that you threw away the lines, right? I didn't go off the script. But he thought that that was a skill. That was me not being prepared. because everybody that like read the entire script and knew what was going on, I think most of them, knowing that it was a heroin addict, they played into the stereotype. So I'm sure everyone in the audition was like, had the voice like, yeah, man. And they didn't want to see him like that. They wanted to see the human side of him. They wanted to see who he was on the corner on the block, making people laugh, how he interacted with family and everything. And I think me throwing the lines away, not intentional, but just by accident, it landed that role, which led me to get the role on The Wire. And the crazy thing, Robert Colesbury, he was one of the executive producers of the show. When I got on set of The Wire, he said, you know, we were really, really considering you to play the role of Omar.
Oh, wow. Mm. That was huge. Yeah.
But they said they wanted to save the role I played, Damian Price, Day-Day. They said, we thought it was something special about this role, and we thought that you could bring something to this. And if you follow that show, you'll notice the first season, it was all about the towers, the interstate.
Yes.
But what happened was the Baltimore Tourism Board complained that every time there's a production in Baltimore, it depicts Baltimore as being a grimy, drug-infested neighborhood. And I'm like, have you walked through Baltimore?
Well, right. Yeah.
I mean, but they didn't want the flack of that. So what happened was they changed the storyline from the towers, and then they went to the docks. And then when they went to the docks, that's when my character got lost. Because if you really look at that show, you could tell that my character was going to do something crazy. First off, to go be a driver to Senator Clay Davis, to introduce myself to Lieutenant Daniels, as Day-Day Price, and he's Lieutenant Daniels, and then to get caught with $30,000 in cash, get arrested, get released, you have to follow the money. So that character was going to be, I was so excited about it because this was going to be the connection with the politics and the streets. But once the character, once they changed the storyline, my character got lost. But David Simon was a real huge fan of mine. So he went above and beyond to create something for me to come back and like in the series. And that was my relationship with The Wire.
I think you did a great job with The Wire. I now that you're saying it, the story arc follows what you're saying, right? And I can understand.
Yeah.
I can understand the pressure from the tourism board to say, hey, we'd like people to actually show up to our city.
Yeah.
So if you could stop, you know, painting it in this light. And I bet the people involved in the production had to say to themselves, well, maybe we should turn it a little bit so that we have a friendly environment that...
And then David Simon... I mean, it'd be one thing if you're a writer that's like from, say, like anywhere but Baltimore that has so much experience with police journalism. So he's really fond of the city. So I'm pretty sure his situation was, I don't want anything to disturb the great relationship that I've had in this city for like 40, 50 years. Mm-hmm. So you got to respect him for that.
Yeah. You're a father. You've got a 9-year-old son. When you had your son... I always like to ask this question of comedians who have children, and especially younger children. Does that change the way that you look at, I mean, it changes everything about your life being a father. I know that, but does it change the way you look at comedy in any way, shape or form? Does that affect the way the creative process for you or what you think about?
Well, to answer your question, no, it didn't really affect my life that much because I've always been locked in with comedy. It's like the thing that like, it's just, my everything. And I've always had a lens. I've always been focused. But the lens, when you have a kid and you have that sense of responsibility, it goes from a wide lens to a very, very fine-tuned lens.
Interesting.
And you're not doing things. It's one thing to just be living for yourself. You know what I mean? So you don't have to be considerate of too much anybody. You don't have to be considerate of yourself. But then when you got another human being that you're trying to make the best human you can, then you got, you know, some of the selfish things that you did, some of the things that you had to consider, it's just the situation is like, I'm living for this guy now, so I got to be the best person I can be.
Absolutely. It doesn't affect your comedy necessarily, but it affects the way that you see the world and you act and you're out there in the world. Did you have a good relationship with your father?
Not really, not in a bad way. My father was it's interesting because my father was a heroin kingpin in D.C.
No way.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah. The funny thing was my parents were totally opposite. He was a heroin kingpin and my mother was a social worker and they had the same clients.
No. Oh, my God.
But it was like. He was in and out. He was in and out of prison. You know, he chose a lifestyle. He had a lot of kids. He chose a lifestyle that didn't give him the opportunity to, I want to say, spend as much time as he should have wanted to. But I don't have no regrets about the relationship that I had with my father. But I will say that really made me want to, like, create every memory I could with my son. Like with the relationship I had with my father, I could probably two handfuls of memories that I remember important things. And I told myself, I don't want that to be the relationship that I have with my son. That's why like this kid gets all the opportunities. I spend as much time as possible with him. I try to encourage him to be the best he can be. Although me and his mom aren't together, we have a great, tolerable, co-parenting relationship. And the thing I know it's kind of tough co-parenting at times, but the thing that I really respect about what we're doing with him, like the other day I went to go visit him, he was at his mom's house and he was like, Dad, can you come over in the morning? Cause I want to have family breakfast with you and watch a movie. And when he says family, he doesn't separate me from his mom.
Yeah.
And he knows family means us together.
Wow. And then you and your ex or the mother of your child, you guys get together and do stuff like that?
Oh yeah, I encourage it. I'm really a person that strongly believes in that. And it was so funny because I can draw how I feel from a relationship I had years ago. I was dating this woman and her parents had separated when she were like 10, her brother like 10 and 12. And as an adult, I knew her, and their parents would always do stuff, go on trips, and he would come over and cook dinner for them. And me, I think food is a love language, right?
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah.
If I'm cooking for you, I'm smashing.
Yeah.
So I was like this. I was like, oh man, he's still hitting. That was the best jerk chicken I ever had in my life. He's still hitting that, right? And she was like, no, they're not. And it wasn't until I got in that situation and realized the importance of keeping that family structure together as most as possible, as best as possible.
Yeah, I think that's really, I don't need to tell you, but I think that's really big of you. My parents, when they got divorced, that was it. See you later. Sayonara. The only time they ever got together in the same room was for like super family functions, right? Someone graduated or something like a marriage, a wedding. And they just don't tolerate each other in that way. They won't.
And I'm not going to sit up here and act like it's been easy.
Oh, I can't imagine. Yeah.
But I will say, and I do tolerate a lot because I'm very, very good to her. You know, I'm very good to her. On the financial side, I'm very good to her on being in my son's life. And like I say, it hasn't been easy. It's sometimes I just want to look at him and say, boy, you owe me for this shit. Because I want to say, here's the money. See you fucking later.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is because I don't know if I would have had the same sentiment if I was a young dad, you know, like in my early 20s or whatever. But I think that some of that is contributed to the fact that I had my son very, very late stage of my life. Mm-hmm. So I really respect what that is. And I also look at it like it's a blessing because I was already of the mindset that I wasn't going to have kids. I was like, and then most people, because psychologically, you got to prepare yourself for that because it'll drive you crazy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, most people in this situation, if they decide they don't want to have kids for some reason, they can't have kids, then they bury themselves in their jobs. You know, they bury themselves in the relationship they have with their nieces and their nephews. And you can find yourself content in that. And I was ready to be content with that. But then when I found out that she was pregnant or anything, it was so overwhelming. I was like, oh my God, we really doing this.
Yeah, we're really doing this. I had kids later on in life too. I'm an older father. And for a number of different reasons, I think that's a blessing. And there's some curse to it too. You know, when you're an older father, you don't have the energy you did and all that other good gravy. But at the end of the day, I'm fucking sure that I was such an asshat when in my 20s.
Oh, if can
I
had, you imagine?
I can't imagine having kids. I was such a shithead out on the street prowling like a stray cat.
I know I'd have been like this. Okay, diapers, bag of weed.
Yeah, exactly.
I would have been like, diapers, bag of blow, 12-pack of Bud Light. I'll take the night shift, honey. Yeah. You take the morning. No problem.
I want to try to make it as kid-friendly as possible, Brian.
Yeah, if you're letting your kids listen to this show, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
I read somewhere that you were a heckler, like your step into comedy was like
a professional heckler. That's what I heard.
Well, it was interesting because, you know, you talk to some comedians, they always say, oh, when I was a kid, I knew I wanted to do this. I had no idea if this is what I would be doing in my life. In fact, I was a military police officer in the Air Force. So I was waiting to be a DC police officer in Washington, DC. And I took a job in the interim. I was head of security for this grocery chain. I was like the head of rent-a-cops or whatever. And there was a guy who used to come to one of the stores I supervised. And he worked for Hostess Cupcake Company. He would stock the shelves. He was a comedian at night. And he would give us free tickets to go to the comedy club. And I would go just as something to do with, you know, the people I work with.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started heckling the comedians. And I started heckling and I started becoming good at heckling. People started actually coming. They were like, yo, by chance, is that asshole gonna be here tonight? Right?
You're part of the show.
My part of the show. And then I started building the audience. And I was so good at destroying those shows and bringing people to hear me heckle that I went to the club owner and tried to get a door deal.
You wanted to take a cut of the door if you were at the show?
I was like, look, man, when I'm here, I increase your business by 30%. I went in. And they was like, if you don't get the hell out of here, what we will do is like, you think you're so bad. I'm sure that club did not want me to succeed. They wanted me to shut the fuck up.
Of course.
But it didn't happen that way. And I'm being honest, the first time, and I think this was the excitement of people coming week by week and wondering when this guy was going to take the next step, right? The first time I touched the microphone, I got a standing ovation.
Wow.
No shit.
And I knew that this was going to be what I would be doing for the rest of my life. That was, and I never, we're talking 30 plus years later. I never gave myself another option. I never looked for a job to offset bills. I was like, if you're broke, you're broke, you know, and I never gave myself a plan B.
I think it worked out okay for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Your body of work is so long.
It's not everybody's path, the path that I chose and how I did it. In fact, you know, people come up to me and they ask for mentoring advice. And the first thing I say is like, if you're really serious about this business, first off, you have to be able to be happy being broke.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you can't find happiness in the struggle, then you're going to.
We know all about that, Brian.
Yeah, we know all about that. Yeah. And the other thing is that you just said something I think is like a tidbit of wisdom. If somebody is out there looking to be a stand-up comedian, a creative type, whatever it is if you give yourself other options, it's likely you'll get other options, right? It's likely you'll go other directions. You have to, there's that kind of this blind faith that you have to have almost.
I've met this Jamaican guy and he used to give me advice about certain things. And he said, Donnell, you know, the people say you don't burn bridges. He said, I say, burn it down. That way you know you can't go back.
You know, Jamaican guys, like, they sound very wise because of that accent. Mm-hmm. I just got to admit it. They could say anything and it would sound like wisdom. I went to Jamaica once and there was a guy that was talking to me and I couldn't tell you half of the stuff that he was saying, but I felt it was profound it was because of the way he was saying it. Yes. I was like, whatever you're saying, that is pretty wise. Yeah,
that's so funny because I used to have a bit about that. I was like a Jamaican, be like, if one man put one burger on one bun with one piece of cheese, what do you have? You have a fucking cheeseburger, man.
That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah, Chrissy is right too. You do have quite the body of work you have put together.
What are some of your favorite sets that you've been on? I mean, it's so varied. Anyway, from the Chappelle Show, which a lot of people know you from.
I would say The Wire in the Corner, that relationship I had there, because I've never took an acting class or anything. So it was a student to everybody. Everybody was kind of helping me out. I didn't know what I was doing. And I wasn't ashamed to say I didn't know what I was doing and people helped me out. I think in Chappelle Show was another one. That show never felt like I was doing work. You know, they, in fact, I used to, what people don't know is if I wasn't really on the show a lot, but when I was on the show, I was on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was times that I used to have so much fun on set, even on my days off, I would go to the set just to hang out.
I love it.
For a couple of reasons, I was like, didn't have a lot of money at the time. I was like, I get free food, right? I get to hang out with my boys. And then there was a strong chance that, and this happened on so many sketches, that Dave and Neil would just say, hey, you want to get some of this. And that's a lot of the roles that I got. It was just because me being there and me like just being in the presence and giving myself an opportunity. One of the things that I really appreciate that I got, I'm glad that was under my belt was being in a Pixar's movie Soul.
It's one of our family's mm-hmm. favorite movies.
My son, because my son didn't have respect for Chappelle Show, The Wire. He didn't give a fuck about none of that, right? But the minute I was on Soul, and the thing about it was Soul, the year Soul came, that's when it was supposed to come out that summer, the pandemic hit.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent us a screener to watch. And this is before they did any promotion of it. And I had a little watch party for my son and his friends. And they could care less about that movie. And this was what ruined it. In that situation for me, because I ordered McDonald's Happy Meals for all the kids, and they got delivered right when my scene was coming out.
Yes, yes, so it's over. It's game over. Yeah. Happy Meal.
But the power of marketing, but once they started talking about Soul, YouTube, and McDonald's and everything, now it's like, my dad is in that movie. Yeah. So to get his get his approval. And him, just the other day, he asked me, what was my favorite voice actors? And I told him Eddie Murphy. I named a couple of people. And I asked him, I haven't been in a lot of stuff. And I was like, who are your favorite voice actors? And he said, you number one, Daddy. Oh. And he said, Jack Black and everything. That made me feel good. The fact that he could go to school and brag and everything and feel good about it, that was a great moment. But I look at my career as everything moves the dial. And I've done a lot of stuff. I forget. I was hanging out with Chappelle a couple weeks ago. He said, Donnell, I don't know if you understand, every black show that resonated with pop culture, that was a hit, you've been on it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
For like the last 30 years, like everyone. I don't look at that because I don't look at my resume. I don't look at anything that, because I just feel good that I found my God-given talent and I was able to do something with it. I don't connect with fame. I don't connect with celebrity. I don't abuse fame or celebrity. The only time I would abuse fame or celebrity, if I'm at Disneyland or something and I don't want to stand
there
in that
line. There you go. Pull out the card.
It's for my son. I'm like, you know, but that's the only thing. The only time I would use my celebrity for anything is if it can help my son out.
Yeah. And, as a matter of fact, I'm going to Disney World in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to use your fame to get me on the rides. I'm going to say, I know Donnell. You know, Soul is one of those movies. If I'm not mistaken, one of the first movies, or the first movie, premiered on when Disney Plus came out. Am I right about that?
Because the theaters were closed.
Yeah, the theaters were closed. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching that with my then young son.
Yeah.
And we watched that on a loop for weeks. We loved that movie. And it some of the first questions about life in general, life and death and all that, came from that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big movie for our family, and we still watch it on occasion. Here, how did you meet Chappelle? Like, how did you get involved in the Chappelle show? I'm not sure I've ever heard the story.
Well, we knew each other because we're both from Washington, D.C. And then being from that city is a great town for comedy. Like, if it was someone before you, which Dave was, I'm older than him, but he was before me, you kind of followed their career because you asked yourself, what did they do to leave? You
know, the
first sign of making in this business is leaving your hometown. It's not like that today because you can be successful, make yourself famous anywhere now. But back then, it's like, all right, he's serious. He moved to New York or L.A. That was just it. It wasn't Atlanta. It wasn't no Austin, Texas. It was none of that. So I knew of him from being the D.C. guy who was making it. And he shared this story on my 50th birthday. Someone asked him, how did you and Donnell meet? And Dave said, you know, I'll tell you how. He said, I was popping. I was getting money and I was in New York and I would go back for the holidays and I would ask, who's the guys that's really doing something? And it was always the regular names that he heard year after year. He said, but then they were like, but there's this one guy named Donnell Rawlins that's, whew. And Dave, being the competitive spirit he is, when they told him that, he said, fuck Donnell Rawlins.
They said,
and the funniest thing was, I had said that about him.
I said,
who from DC is really killing it? Because I want to go for their neck. And they said, hey, sure. I was like, what about him? They said, he's young, he's smart, so-and-so. And I said the same thing. Fuck Dave Chappelle. I'm kidding. So we knew of each other from our reputation and what we did to DC. And then that just was one thing about, you know, when you go to New York, like if you were coming from DC, it wasn't too many of us. And it was like you just had a connection because, oh, that's the dude, he from so-and-so. What's poppin', you know?
Yeah.
That led to me being on the radar of a funny guy. But it was a relationship that I had with Neil Brennan
that
really landed me the job on the show, because Neil and Dave had wrote the movie Half Baked.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cult favorite. And Neil got some writing gigs. He wrote like three other movies that he got paid for, but the movies weren't getting the green light. So they was just being canned. So he thought that, you know, maybe he would try his foot in directing. He never directed anything, but he wrote this one, this short film. It was only one person and another person. And he reached out to my manager. He's like, man, I really like Donnell. You think he would do this for me? And I did it. And that was already doing a corner and some other stuff.
Yeah.
And I said, man, I know you can't afford to pay me. I said, if you ever in a situation where you could toss me a bone, do it. And that bone was tossed as the Chappelle Show like 3 months after
oh,
that.
Oh, wow.
Look at that.
What a bone.
Yeah, what a bone. Yeah, we had Neil on the show. And we heard the story about the early kind of, you know, blossoming of the whole Chappelle Show. It's a fascinating story in and of it.
Yeah, I agree. I will, as much as Dave is the star of the show, and you don't have a show without a star, and as much support he gave me, I can't, you know, thank Neil enough, because if it wasn't for him co-signing and really pushing for me to be on the show, you know, there would be no Ashley Larry, there'd be no Beautiful, there'd be none of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, so you're on the road still today. I mean, I got to imagine for almost all the comics that we talked to, with maybe the exception of a few who are doing less now because they can, but I got to imagine that that's just in your blood. You like traveling, you like doing the road, you like being out there cutting your teeth and finding new material.
I do, but, you know, I will say that it's been more difficult because of me having a young son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The role isn't as appealing as it used to be, but, you know, it's probably like 70 to 75% of my bread and butter. So there's no way for me to get around it, but I continue to try to make steps where, you know, I don't have to have such a vigorous schedule where I'm trying to position myself where I could get to that point where I can just go tour for 3 months and be good for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Well, do you do the podcast too, right? When did you?
That's how funny you said that, because when I was on Rogan's podcast some years ago, I said, I think I need to reinvent myself or just reintroduce myself to Hollywood. I need to make money in Hollywood so I can be here more. And he was like, just start a podcast. And I was like, ain't no damn money, no podcast. And then I Googled his network. I was like, so.
Podcast. Yeah.
You know, but one thing about it, anybody tell you with a podcast, the number one thing you got to do, the consistency of it. You know, I was super, super aggressive with it during the pandemic because I didn't have too many options. But once the world started opening up where I could go out and get my normal money, I probably didn't put as much interest in it as I should. But the other day, one of my internet dudes or graph, whatever you want to call him, he was like, you got to update your W-9. You got some money waiting in Facebook, right? And I looked at it. I was like, how did we do that? I was like, it was a nice amount too. I was like, we need to do more of that.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That's it. That's the thing is that, you know, it's largely about content creation. And once you create the content, it can just keep on turning and burning. And a lot of these platforms are automated. They make the money for you. They find the sponsors. You know, they take a good cut of it, but you're so prolific and you've done so much that if you just keep on repurposing that content, you get the thing that I like about what we're doing, and you have done this for the last 30 years, is that you've got a library of content, right? Digital, audio, TV, whatever it is. That library can continue to be repurposed and recashed in over and over and over again. Look at Rogan. He's got 4,000 episodes, 1,500 episodes, whatever it is. He can just keep on turning and burning that catalog. He could retire tomorrow and people would continue to buy that like it was Seinfeld on repeats.
Mm-hmm. But that's why it goes to like what we're talking about in regard to how important college is going to be. And for that, you got a person like me that's an older guy that might not be as nice as that, but that's going to be a job. There's going to be a guy like this. You know what? Hire me. I'm going to do the scrubbing. I'll find it all. I'll set it up. And it's right there, but it's like, who's going to dial in?
Yeah.
Put it together for you.
There are whole agencies that do this. I mean, you know, I'm happy to discuss that with you, but I don't want to bore the audience, but there are whole agencies that do this for you. They take a cut of the revenue, but they go out and they do that. They find the good material. They put it out there for you. You know, video production companies, social agencies that will do this. And with a huge library of content like you have, you know, you just keep filming yourself when you go to these stand-ups and you'll be doing this forever and ever. Podcasting is a game of consistency. It really is. Mm-hmm. We are not that good at what we do on any given day, but we have, you know, almost 1,000 episodes. So for us, it's like we have an advantage in the sense that we just keep on doing it. Blind faith,
right,
Donnell.
Blind
faith. Like the Jamaican guy said, we burned bridges a long time ago. We're stuck.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I see people like yourself and other guys other guys in, gals, women, them, they, thus, that
really yes, all of
it. Put the focus on. And it's something that lately I've been getting back on it, but it's something that I know that I have to do because it's just right there. And it's like what they call it, it's mailbox money.
Yeah.
Oh, mailbox money.
That's what
money,
it is.
Yep.
It's mailbox money. I saw you were out in Indianapolis with Dr. Phil, the Dr. Phil, and Rory Scoville, Joe List, and you guys, did you guys do a show over the weekend?
Yeah, we did. It was my first time doing Dr. Phil, Adam Carolla thing. I've been knowing Adam Carolla for years. I'm really super excited that he's found a lick, if you want to say, that's really doing well for him. And he's like been a fan of mine for years. And I went to go see his show some time ago. Teddy Swims was one of the guests, and I wanted to go hang out with Teddy, and he just so happened to be on Adam's show. And I was like, Adam, you got to give me a date. And he got the date, and we did it. And I was had a little reservations because that character was a spinoff off of Kill Tony. Right. And then for some reason, sometimes the Kill Tony, they're not huge fans of mine.
What happened with Kill Tony? Well, you got well, like there was some like dust up at some point or something.
It was like, you know, everything is, I'm going to tell you, the biggest person with a podcast is your producer and how they edit clips.
That's right.
And I was doing one of the shows in Austin, Texas. And this was a time during the pandemic where nobody wanted to do Kill Tony. They were afraid of getting COVID. And I had just happened to be there. It was like, yo, I need you. Will you come on the show? And I did him a favor. I said, I'm not going to be here too long. I was on the show for 2 hours, started getting a little buzz. I had some prior shit that I had to do. And I got into a situation with one of the comedians. And they edited this video, this clip that went viral. And they made it look like the guy was roasting me and I walked off and stormed off.
They did make it look like that. Yeah. For sure. For sure. No doubt about it.
And then those fans are so, whoever, whatever they are.
Yeah, I got it. Know,
and yeah. I've been on different platforms, tried to explain what happened. Nobody believed me, but I was like, I'm not going to waste my time and energy trying to, you know, prove to these guys who I am, you know.
Yeah.
You know, as much as they want to say, I'm the walk-off guy, but if you go through the bank and they got thousands of shows of Kill Tony, you ask them how many times anybody's ever got a standing ovation on a show, and I was one of them when I just put Lucas on there, but I look at like you have people that are trolls. It doesn't matter what you do. You won't win them over. But at the end of the day, engagement is engagement. And whenever I'm on those shows or I'm a part of them, that's what happens.
Yeah, man. That's the dangerous part about content creation, right? Is that if you're in the game of telling it like it is, then you show it how it was. If you're in the game of clickbait, then you show it how you want it to be. And so, or
most
what
people are into how you want it to be. How you want it to be is doing way better than I dabble. Yeah. Man, I have so many stories about Hollywood and relationships I had with people and stuff that I could just go on any platform and just start airing shit out and go crazy.
But, yeah,
you know, my morals and my integrity won't let me do that.
Ours either. Sometimes to our detriment. We just won't do the clickbait. We're not going to twist people's words. You know, it is what it is, and we'll show it in full. And if it was boring, well, then, you know, move on to the next thing. That is what it is. But no one can say that about Donnell Rawlings. And listen, also, when you have a show that is completely based on that roast factor, then your audience is going to be, they're going to be lions and tigers
prime
also, right?
That.
They're primed for that. That's what they do.
But that's why I don't, like, everybody, I don't do them because it's easy for you to say, oh, man, these are just jokes. Yeah, but they hurt.
They do. Yes. Right.
And a punch in the face hurts, too. So let's just avoid all of that. I try to stay away from stuff that don't fit what I do.
I agree.
I like
the initial, my initial reason for being on that show is what, you know, me and I consider Tony Hinchcliffe a friend. So it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. It is what it is. All right. Well, listen, Donnell has a brand new special.
Yep.
He's got the podcast.
He's
on the road. Social medias. It's all in the links below. Donnell, do you ever come to Atlanta? Are you on Atlanta? Are you coming to Atlanta on this tour?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure it's in the fall. I love Atlanta. I used to love this club. It's a small club, but I used to have so much history with them. It's called the Laughing Skull.
Oh, yeah.
The Laughing Skull.
Of course.
Love that one.
Of course.
That's where we are. We're in Atlanta.
We're in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always up through there. I think, I don't know. If you go to my website, DonnellRollins.com, I think I'm coming to the Atlanta Comedy Theater in like the next 2 or 3 months. Always nice. Do well down there. And I love the people of Atlanta, and I've got some good friends there.
If you come down to Atlanta, and we'll, I mean, we don't have to decide this now. I'm just throwing this off. If you come to Atlanta, we have a studio where we would love to see you in person. So if you come, you let us know when you're coming, and then we'd love to invite you for 30,
and promote
45
the show.
Minutes to promote the show.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It'll be on my list of things I have to hit.
Okay, nice. That's great. Donnell Rawlings, all the stuff in the show notes. Such a pleasure to see you. We hope to see you
Thank
again,
you
maybe in person in
here.
A couple months.
I'm rich, bitch!
You did it. We didn't even have to ask.
We didn't even have to ask. All right, that's going on the promo reel.
Yes.
Donnell Rawlings, thanks so much.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
You'll make this rather snappy, won't you? I have some very heavy thinking to do before 10 o'clock.
Hi, cats and kittens. Rachel here. Do you ever get the urge to speak endlessly into the void, like Brian? Well, I've got just the place for you to do that. 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. Feel free to call and yell all you want. Tell Brian I need a raise. Compliment Chrissy's innate ability to put up with all his shenanigans. Or tell us a little story. The juicier, the better, by the way. We love to hear your voice, because Lord knows we're done listening to ourselves. Also, give us a follow on your favorite socials at The Commercial Break on Insta, TCB Podcast on TikTok. And for those of you who like to watch, oh, that came out wrong. We put all the episodes out on video, youtube.com/thecommercialbreak and tcbpodcast.com for all the info on the show, your free sticker, or just to see how pretty we look. Okay, I gotta go now. I've got a date with my dog. No, seriously, Axel needs food. Today is pork chop day.
Well, Mr. Donnell Rawlings.
Wow.
What more could you ask for? He talked about it all. He didn't get in the Air Force to save your ass. He got in the Air Force to save his ass.
That's right.
And you know what? Who could blame him?
I know.
They've been doing that since Vietnam, you know? It's I agree with him, and to some degree. It's like, you know, I'm here for the benefits. I'm here for the cruise package, kids. That's what I'm here for. So, but thank you for his service anyway, even if he wasn't in it to save my life. Still got more balls than I do. That's all I got to say. So thank you to all the men and women who served.
I love how the woman ran behind him on the stage.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the video?
And he's like, yeah. I'm not here to save you.
Yeah. Watch the video. It's crazy. It's online about the two guys who got into a fight at his show recently. I think it's from June 2nd or 3rd. He posted it. And then there's a follow-up video that shows the aftermath where there's not only a couple women on stage, a couple men ran behind him, too. But who could blame them in this day and age? I mean, you never know what's going to happen. So, Donnell, the hero we never know we needed and he didn't want to be. Mm-hmm. There you go. How's that? Donnell Rawlings. All the pertinent links are in the show notes. Check out his new special. I might reach out to Donnell and explain to him how he needs to take that body of work that he has and start putting it out there for public consumption.
Yes.
You can't hide that away. He's got to get hep with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of kids, he sounds like a good father.
Oh, yeah.
So you always applaud a good father. Fathers need to be good. That's what we need to do. We need to be good. Take care of our kids.
That's right. You do a great job, too.
Well, thank you. I try. I just goof around with them. That's all I really do.
You're the fun one.
I am the fun one. Anyway, TCB. How do you get a hold of us? TCBpodcast.com. That's our website. All the comings and goings of Chrissy and I, as well as your free sticker. It's free to you for now. We may not do this forever because we learned our lesson by getting some coupon site out there, put our website and said free stickers here. And guess what? Thousands of people asked for stickers. So we had to do a little quiz to make sure they were TCB fans. Anyway, 212-433-3TCB, 212-433-3822. Text us questions, comments, concerns, content ideas at The Commercial Break on YouTube. I mean, at The Commercial Break on Instagram and youtube.com/TheCommercialBreak for all the episodes on video. Okay, Chrissy, that's all I can do for now.
I think so.
I'll tell you that I love you.
And I love you.
I'll say best to you. And best to you out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, Chrissy and I will say, we do say, and we must say,
goodbye.
Keith.